We're reading from the article entitled, Who Are You Offending? And we've been reading it for a couple of days, a couple of classes. And last week we spoke about this connection between devotees in which by their mercy you advance and by offending them you harm yourself. You harm your bhakti. So there's this mystical, invisible link between Vaishnavas, especially between juniors and seniors, in which we advance by their mercy, and Prabhupada said we cannot advance without their mercy. So we're dependent on serving them properly relating with them, devotees, which is in the form of service, in the form of appreciation, glorification. And if we offend devotees, if we criticize devotees, then we get the opposite result. And there's so many stories in Shastra about the opposite results that accrued due to those offenses. So we spoke a lot about that yesterday, the paradox. On the one hand, if you do the right thing, then you are in the proper position to advance. In fact, that is how we advance. And then if you do the wrong thing, then what Prabhupada said happens is that you can continue the process of bhakti. It's very interesting the way he explained it. He explained that you can continue the process of bhakti. You can go on chanting and executing bhakti in different ways, but you won't be making advancement. And he equates that with chanting. We could chant offensively for hundreds of years or hundreds of lifetimes and not get love of Krishna due to the aparat. So the same way, if we offend a devotee, we can be executing devotional service for lifetimes but not get the result of love of Krishna due to those offenses. So this article has titles, and I believe, what page are we on? If you go to page 2 of the article, I don't know. Actually, if you're getting it off the internet, it won't say page 2. I don't believe it'll say page 2. But the subtitle is Loving Krishna Means Respecting Others. And that comes under the title. There's Do You Want Blessings, which was the last thing we read last week. And then Loving Krishna Means Respecting Others. So we're going to read that. And if you have any questions while we're reading this, just type them in chat, and then I'm going to see Bhakti Greg. Thank you for coming. Dr. Greg wanted a consciousness upgrade, so he's attending, hoping to get an upgrade, an instant upgrade of consciousness. Hopefully, you'll be successfully upgraded to consciousness upgrade 2.0. The latest upgrade, or should we say 108, Mahatma's latest upgrade. Okay, so tonight's classes are latest upgrade in consciousness. And Pallavi is with us, and many other people are watching who haven't joined chat. So let's go back to the article. And then periodically, I don't have the article printed out, so I'm reading it off my computer. So periodically I'll go to chat, and then you'll see me looking away from the camera, which means right now I'm looking at you, but then I'll look away at my computer screen, as I'm doing now. So, loving Krishna means respecting others. We should also be careful to not offend people in general. That's called jana aparad in Sanskrit. Jana means people in general. Jana means person. So, an aparad, as we know, means offense. But in the spiritual sense, it means being separated from the service of Radha. We discussed that earlier. Or to be separated from the service of Radha means to be separated from Krishna. So aparada is that which separates us from Krishna, or distances us from Krishna. So jana aparada means offenses to people in general. So this course was entitled Vaishnava aparada. But as I've explained before many times, they go together, because if there's a mentality to be critical of people in general, it's likely to infiltrate within the devotional world and to be critical of devotees, because it's a basic frame of reference, or a way we look at the world, we look at ourselves, we look at others. And there are reasons why we do this. So, it's not okay to be offensive to people who are not on a spiritual path or people we don't recognize as devotees, and then we think, well, I didn't offend a devotee, I just offended this person where I work, or my neighbor, or my brother. But any offense to anyone has some effect. Obviously, if we offend a superior Vaishnava, a very senior, advanced Vaishnava, it's going to have a greater effect. But any kind of offense has some effect, if nothing else, that we are carrying a mentality which is polluting our own consciousness. A very critical mentality is polluting our consciousness. So, to love Krishna means to show affection for all his parts and parcels. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that the injunction not to criticize or blaspheme devotees, sadhu-ninda, should be applied to non-devotees as well. Krishna is not pleased when we think, I won't find fault with devotees, but it's no big thing to disrespect non-devotees or find fault with them. If the fault-finding mentality remains, no matter who it's directed towards, it's a contamination. Now you might say, well, I've been reading Srila Prabhupada's books for many years, and in Srila Prabhupada's books he does criticize non-devotees, or he criticizes even spiritualists. So why does Srila Prabhupada criticize spiritualists? Because he's making a distinction between what is pure devotional service and what is not pure devotional service. And so by citing examples of people who are not engaged in pure devotional service, he can use their examples to distinguish what is a path of purity by, of course, citing examples of those who are pure, pure devotees, how they live, which is, and how they act, which is described in Bhagavatam. And then by citing examples of those who may be on a spiritual path or are not pure, and those who are engaged in material activities, to show the foolishness of material activities, to show what is the result being frustration, result being unhappiness, and the result being ultimately death, and then rebirth according to one's past activities and karma. So it's not that he's vindictive in any way, it's not that he's getting enjoyment from it whatsoever, but he's doing it to clarify as a way of educating. And it's not, of course, the only thing he does, and it's not a mentality that in his ordinary life he disrespects people, and so his preaching is showing disrespect, and that's just who he is. No, he's making a point. It's more of an academic study of people. In his personal life, he did not disrespect people. In fact, he respected everyone. He may have found fault with their beliefs, with their philosophy, but he never disrespected them. He always gave respect to people. According to their position, he would respect them, and he never thought, oh, I am better than you. It was not his mentality. So we should also not be in this mood of showing or pointing our finger at people, looking at their faults, showing how they're fallen in a critical way, in any vindictive way, or in any way thinking ourselves to be superior. I just heard a story in which Prabhupada was in a park, and in the morning he saw people going to work, and they were in the park probably like 6 or 6:30. And he actually had tears in his eyes, the devotees said, when he was pointing out, you know, or the devotees were pointing out that the people are going to work so early, they're working so hard. And one of the devotees said he was looking, and he saw out of Prabhupada's corner of his eyes, tears were coming down, and Prabhupada said, they are working so hard, and he was actually crying. So, you know, Prabhupada may be critical that people are working. Often he says people are working like asses. Of course, Krishna says that also. So people are working like asses. They're working so hard to get some money so they can have two pieces of toast and a cup of tea in the morning. So he would criticize. You know, life is not meant for working hard. It's meant for self-realization. We have to work, but it's not meant for working so hard that we have no time for self-realization. So he'd criticize them in that way. But in his practical life, we see that he sees them going to work, working that hard, working, as he said, like asses. But he's shedding a tear, feeling sorry that they're doing that, feeling compassion. So that's the idea. That it was, he was never critical. It's just, if we, the point is, if we develop a critical mentality, a condescending mentality, it's just going to enter, it's going to go over the border into the devotional world. So that's what we're talking about really in this class, of changing that mentality. I'm going to go to chat to see if anyone has anything to say. And if you can't hear me or the picture isn't good, then let me know. And so, did the camera freeze? Sometimes when it freezes, you just have to reboot. And I'll give you, I'm going to write in, I think if you go back up the chat, you can see. But I'll write in the, this is the website, TS Train, whoops, www.tstrain, and then when you get there, you go to articles, and then you go to number 37, and that article is entitled, Who Are You Offending? And that's what we're reading from. So let me know, now that I've enchanted, chat, if you have any trouble hearing me or seeing me, we're just dealing with the lighting that I try to arrange when I'm going from place to place. Lighting is an issue. And, okay, it looks like nobody's complaining. Kremlin's with us. Kremlin 69 from the Ukraine. And we're trying to upgrade our consciousness beyond the petty fault-finding, the world of fault-finding, which is an easy world to live in, no doubt. We have to work on getting out of that world. And as we know, if we're honest, or we'll admit, that often we fault-find because it's hard for us to acknowledge that some people are better than us. We want to pull them down. And so, of course, the process of bhakti is to lift people up, not pull them down. And so we want to develop a mentality in which we lift people up. And when we lift people up, what happens to us? We also go up. And when we pull people down, where do we go? Well, if you're wrestling and you get someone on the ground, generally you're on the ground with them. Maybe in boxing you can knock them on the ground and stay up. So let's use the example of wrestling. So the same way, if you're lifting somebody up, then the higher you lift them, the higher you go. That's the idea. So, and I would say generally, if we're already down low, it's often we want to bring people down to our level. We want to bring them, that's when we want to bring people down, when we're down. So, okay, let's go back to the article. The Camouflaged Aparad. I would like to share with you a very instructive story about Aparad. Unfortunately, it's my story. And as I said earlier in an earlier class, whenever I'm having difficulty in devotional service, one of the first places I look is, have I offended a devotee? Either verbally or in my mind, because they're mental offenses. It's not, don't think that if you don't say anything, it's not an offense. Probably the most common offense that we make is mental. So you can make an offense in your mind, you can make offense verbally, you can make offense physically. So whenever I feel difficulty in devotional service, a difficulty which doesn't necessarily relate to what I'm doing, in other words, I'm chanting well, I'm doing my normal routine, but I'm feeling some difficulty, I'll look and ask myself, have I offended anybody? Or do I have a critical mentality? Am I not having an appreciative mentality towards devotees, particularly towards senior devotees, towards devotees that are more advanced than I am? Because that's naturally, we'll tend to criticize people who are more advanced. We're not threatened by people under us. We're threatened by people either who are either peers or above us. So this is my story, and I'm telling it because I believe it's very instructive. As a result of helping facilitate the japa retreats earlier this year, my chanting improved in some major ways. The result is I have been much more Krishna conscious. But there was a period in which my consciousness fell to some pretty low places. This was probably about a year and a half ago when I wrote this. I felt like some wicked force had come over me, and I was not sure how or why it was happening. All I could think of was that I need to find out what was causing it. So again, this point, sometimes we may feel drawn into Maya in a very powerful way or big way. Perhaps an abnormally, we fall into an abnormally low level or a level or a state of consciousness which is, it's not normal for us. And it seems to come out of nowhere. So that's what happened to me. Just almost like taking a drug and the drug starting to act and change your consciousness. Of course, I don't know if you've all taken psychedelic drugs before, but I had the great misfortune of growing up at a time when that was pretty normal. So you take these drugs and gradually your consciousness changes, and then you say, I'm coming onto the drug. You can feel a change. Things are starting to look different. You're thinking differently. You're feeling differently. So just like that, I was thinking differently. I was feeling differently, but in a bad way. Becoming more materially attached, or material desire beginning to become stronger in my heart. So naturally, I'm thinking, what's causing this? I have to get out of this mess. So I traced back my steps and realized that it all started with me recently becoming somewhat obsessed with aspects of leadership in ISKCON that I felt were hurting the movement. I didn't think I was being envious or offensive. I just felt I was isolating problems and looking at solutions. And what I did was I actually wrote about it. So it didn't seem such a bad thing, did it? I subsequently wrote a short paper on the topic. And after I finished the article, it's like right after I wrote the article, my consciousness went... took a nosedive. What's the sound effect for that? Like right, it was like the next day after I wrote the article. You think writing. You know, Prabhupada said we should write every day. Write your realizations, a few sentences, a few words, whatever. Write. Writing, Prabhupada said writing is for purification. So, I should have been purified by writing, right? No. Nosedive. Consciousness went down into the mud. It's pretty scary. The next day, my rounds were terrible. In fact, okay, start playing the music. What happened to Mahatma Das the next day? Tune in next week to find out. No, so. In fact, in the following days, I had a really difficult time chanting. I didn't want to chant, and I couldn't concentrate. That's pretty bad for the Japa man. I had become known as Japa man. I didn't have a Japa cape yet with a J and a heart like Superman. But I had been facilitating so many Japa retreats. I was Japa man. Da-da-da-da-da. Japa man. And all of a sudden, Japa man doesn't want to chant Japa. Japa man can't focus on chanting Japa. It reminds me of the story of when Krishna left the planet. You know, Arjuna was the most powerful warrior. Nobody could defeat Arjuna. And after Krishna left the planet, he became powerless. He had a fight with some coward men and they beat him up. You know, I'm sure some coward girls probably could have beat him up. He lost his shakti. Krishna was feeling so much separation from Krishna. So it's like I lost my japa shakti. I didn't want to chant. I couldn't concentrate. For the next few weeks, I was having very little realization in Krishna consciousness. It was so bad, I couldn't even write illuminations because I had nothing to say. I write this newsletter every month. And what I write about is often what I'm living, what I'm reflecting on in my own life, and that way is very real. It's not just that I'm going into Shastra and studying something, writing about it, but I'm writing about things that are going on in my life and how I'm dealing with it. So it's very practical. You know, and I couldn't write an article because I wasn't getting any realization. It was just like, you know, it was just like my Krishna consciousness was getting sucked out I felt like I was being sucked out of a funnel. The fact was that my article, the article about the problems with leadership in ISKCON, the fact is, what I realized later, the fact was that my article was motivated by envy, and I offended some wonderful devotees, but I just wasn't acknowledging it. And you might read the article and think, no, you're not offending. But when I looked at what was really motivating my writing, I saw that I was offensive. But I hadn't acknowledged it. Then something amazing happened. I was chanting my rounds. Okay, it's the amazing part. Sit on the edge of your seat, play the music. This is really it, the climax. Then something amazing happened. I was chanting my rounds early one morning, and my mind started going to some really dark places, thinking of things I rarely, if ever, think about. It was frightening to observe. My mind was on a downward path of its own. And it seemed like all I could do was sit there and just watch it go wherever it wanted. I don't know if you've ever had the misfortune of being in a situation where you watch your mind go, and you can't do anything about it other than watch it just go down like a spiral, you know, like water go down the sink. And it's just going down, you know, the force of gravity. So it was like the force of gravity was pulling my mind into Maya. Just dragging it down. And I couldn't do anything. I was just watching it. I was helpless. And it's kind of interesting because I'm very much in the mood that you can control your mind. You can choose. Anytime there's anything negative in your life, you can choose to be positive. You can do something. So I'm very much, you know, I very much live my life that way, to not be controlled by the environment, but to respond to it in a particular way so that I can stay in Krishna consciousness. I don't have to give myself up or surrender to the circumstances and just go along with whatever is happening around me, but be Krishna conscious, have Krishna conscious responses to the environment. So in this situation, it was amazing because I couldn't do anything. I was just watching my mind go down. It was very scary. It was frightening to observe. My mind was on a downward path of its own, and it seemed like all I could do was sit there and just watch it go wherever it wanted. This is like a horror story, right? Then one thought began resounding over and over in my mind, and this one thought saved me. Don't you realize you have offended devotees in the paper you wrote? You did this because you are envious of them. So that's the only thing I could think of, because I couldn't understand why my mind was going down like that. So I had no idea. Immediately I began asking for forgiveness for my offenses. But that was my immediate response. Because when you offend devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that you should ask for forgiveness. Of course, I was alone at that time. The devotees I offended were all over the world, and I couldn't call them up. So I just, in my mind, asked for forgiveness. I was basically asking Krishna, please forgive me for offending those devotees, but I also was asking those devotees in my mind, forgive me for any offenses I may have committed, even though they couldn't hear me directly, neither could they hear my offenses. I didn't send the article to anybody, fortunately, because obviously I had doubts about it after I wrote it. Immediately I began asking for forgiveness for my offenses. I then appreciated the service and the activities of the leaders I had criticized. What happened next was incredibly amazing. So tune in to my next newsletter and I'll tell you what happened. Okay, only kidding. Just trying to create some excitement. Okay, it's amazing. I'll tell you now. Should I tell you? Okay, let's go to chat. Let's see. Okay, folks on chat, what do you think? Should I tell you the rest of the story? Of course, you can read it, so that's a dumb question. Okay, just say yes so I know you're there. Should I tell you? Kremlin is excited. Wow, I could feel the excitement all the way from the Ukraine. Polyby, oh, please tell me. Okay, all right, I'll tell you. This is amazing what happened. immediately, I mean right on the spot, my consciousness changed. And those horrible thoughts left me as easily and quickly as they came. I could then clearly hear the holy name and chant with concentration and devotion. Something I hadn't been able to do for weeks. So, really what happened was, immediately after I made the offense, I got a consciousness, immediate consciousness downgrade, like major downgrade to my consciousness. Like I might have been at an 8.0, and I got downgraded to minus 8. And then when I asked these devotees for forgiveness, the devotees I was critical of, and I appreciated them and I glorified them in my mind, I got a consciousness upgrade, like immediate upgrade. You know, like, didn't even have to call India and get a tech support from India. I got immediate consciousness upgrade by the transcendental system of Krishna. It's amazing. I mean, this was amazing for me. I mean, it was like, this was all very real. It was like my consciousness was going up and it was going down, and I was just watching it happen. Just I made the effort to pray and ask for forgiveness, and I watched it go back up just the same way I watched it go back down. It's quite amazing. This experience was Krishna's mercy. It was a graphic warning of how important it is to be affectionate to devotees. I had to acknowledge that in the name of objective analysis and the welfare of ISKCON, I am often just indulging my own envy and jealousy. Now I want to go back to a really important point, and I made it earlier, but I want to make it again in relation to this. The point that Prabhupada made is that we can be offending devotees. We can be doing incredibly offensive things to devotees. And we can be doing devotional service simultaneously. And naturally, or at least most of us would think, if I'm really offending devotees, Krishna would not allow me to go on in devotional service, but he's allowing me to go on. And then you think, well, it must not be offensive, because I'm chanting my rounds, I'm following the principles, I'm doing devotional service. But Prabhupada made this amazing point. You can do those things for lifetimes and not become Krishna conscious if you continue offending devotees. So it's not necessarily that you can't continue in bhakti. But what is definitely true is that you won't get love of Krishna. You'll remain on the neophyte platform. So yeah, Krishna may allow you to continue being offensive and at the same time do devotional service. But you won't get love of Krishna. You won't get the goal of devotional service. Or Krishna may remove you from devotional service. That's something we see often, but I'm only making the point that sometimes he doesn't remove you. He allows you to continue, but you're really not making any advancement. You know, we read earlier this idea that if we're offensive to devotees and we chant Krishna's name, it doesn't attract Krishna. You know, there's this story that Krishna went to the home, I believe it was the home of Vidura, and Vidura became so excited, he went to get something to feed Krishna, and he got bananas. But in his excitement, he peeled the bananas, put the banana down, and gave the banana peel to Krishna, and Krishna ate the banana peels because he offered it with love. And then Duryodhana invited Krishna when Krishna came to Hastinapur. He invited him to stay with him. Krishna wouldn't stay there because Duryodhana was envious. The Pandava was ultimately envious of Krishna as well. So Krishna didn't want to be there, didn't want to be with him. So bhakti means to execute Krishna consciousness with love. So we can go on executing it without love. We can be committing offenses and executing devotional service. And the heart remains hard. Even the Bhagavatam says, you can be chanting the holy name and crying, but your heart can remain hard because of offenses. And you would think, if I'm crying, I could be crying, then that must be bhakti. Who knows why someone could be crying? The Prabhupada said, if the heart is hard and one apparently is exhibiting ecstatic symptoms, it's all false. But even one may be crying or whatever, but still, you know, you may think, well, it's genuine. I'm not trying to cry, I'm just crying, and it's genuine. But still, the Bhagavatam says, even if you're crying, if you're not chanting purely, the heart remains hard. So the heart remains hard. So that's the same point. If we offend a devotee, we can go on devotional service, but the heart remains hard. Excuse me. The heart remains hard. All right. I got it. The heart remains hard. Say that three times. The heart remains hard. Okay. So the goal of bhakti is a soft heart. The goal of bhakti is not just to chant Hare Krishna. That's not the goal. One may say, well, the goal is to chant 24/7. You could say, ultimately, that's not the goal. The goal is to melt the heart. When the heart melts, one will chant 24/7. There's no question. The heart must be melted. That's the process of bhakti. So if one is offending devotees, that means one's heart is hard. So it's this dichotomy. I'm doing bhakti, I'm offending devotees. It means I have a hard heart, but the process of bhakti is to soften my heart. So that's the idea. Okay. Let's continue reading. Beginning with the sentence a few days ago. Okay, I'm going to go to chat, just see if you have any questions, comments. Oh, Kremlin has a nice question. Kremlin, oh, you're in Texas. Amazing, I didn't know that. How do we deal with an authority who is clearly corrupt or inefficient? What a question. Clearly corrupt or clearly inefficient. That is a difficult question to answer without knowing the exact details. But I can only give a general answer. I don't want to give a practical answer because I don't know exactly what corrupt means and how corrupt. Are they stealing sweet balls? Are they stealing Mahaprasadam? Are they lying to devotees? Are they stealing money? Is the temple falling apart because they're inefficient? Or are you talking about an employee or whatever? Maybe if it's in the temple, maybe we need to talk privately. But I would say, generally, there's two things that I personally advise. That in dealing with any situation like this, we never develop a hateful mentality, or a hateful or a harmful mentality, or a critical mentality in the sense of it's coming from our criticism is coming from someplace other than wanting to remedy the situation. Now, if you want to remedy, if there's clearly a problem and you want to remedy the situation, you may have to be critical. But you're not motivated out of hatred, or you're not motivated to pull somebody down, you're not motivated to look good, you're not motivated out of resentment, you're motivated out of doing the right thing. Just like Prabhupada said, a spiritual master's duty is to criticize his disciples. Now, sometimes you come into a situation in which you don't really have any influence. And in a situation like that, you can either bring it to someone who has influence and or pray that Krishna in some way rectify the situation. You know, there are a lot of things that we don't have control of. And Krishna eventually rectifies. You know, there were people who were corrupt in our movement. And without any authority having to do anything, they fell away from Krishna consciousness. So sometimes Krishna deals with it. And sometimes we just have to pray to Krishna, please handle the situation in a way that people won't get harmed, that the culprits will be found out, and or the persons who are not qualified for a particular service will be replaced by people who are qualified. You know, my main point, as you can see, is that we shouldn't allow the problems that others create to bring us down. But we should deal with it in a way, in a Krishna conscious way, so that we can do whatever dirty work we have to do, so-called dirty work, without becoming dirty. You know, Prabhupada said it was the thankless task of the guru, because he had to find fault with devotees, because devotees, Vaishnavas, don't find fault. So sometimes we have to deal with that, the thankless task. We discussed this in our resentment course, that a person may hurt you to such an extent that you might even have to get a, what do they call that, when you you go to court and get a restraining order. You might have to get a restraining order so that person is not allowed to call you, not allowed to contact you, not allowed to come close to you. Get restraining orders and say, this person cannot come within a mile of me, cannot call me, and so forth. You can still forgive that person and at the same time get the restraining order. So, you know, you have to separate. There's two things you're doing. One thing is what you're doing within your own heart, and the other thing is what you're doing practically to deal with the situation. So that's a general answer, but I think you can understand where I'm coming from. So let's go back to the article. And Kremlin, if you want to talk more about that, then you have to email me. I'll give you my email address. I cannot even... I guess my chat has kind of froze because I can't even email. It's mahat@aol.com. Yeah, I don't even see where I can respond. I'm so unfortunate. Oh, there you are. I forgot to put the title of the... That's the title of the article that I thought I put in. Okay. So, here's the email. Or, you know, I'm Mahatma Das on Facebook. So, we can talk more about that. Okay, so let's read a little more of the article. A few days ago, I read something that confirmed what I had experienced. Lord Chaitanya said that appreciation of and service to the devotees is the remedy for Vaishnava aparadha. In addition, he said it is also the antidote. Wow, isn't that amazing? So we have two things going on. If you commit an offense to devotee, a very powerful way to deal with that, of course, we ask for forgiveness, but it's to appreciate. So why is that powerful? Because offending or being critical or being resentful and appreciation are really on two opposite ends of the emotional, if you look at the emotions as a pole. Say, what would be the higher emotion? Well, like love and affection, respect. That would be high. And what would be the lower emotions? Hatred, jealousy, envy, resentment. So if you think of emotions on a pole, and you know, with levels of consciousness, the highest consciousness, like we say, the highest consciousness is to love Krishna. And along with loving Krishna, what happens? We love other living entities. And so, therefore, the lowest consciousness would be people like Hitler, Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, people who are willing to kill thousands of people or millions of people. It's a very low level of consciousness. So, if we're on this low level where we're feeling resentment or hatred, could be envy, or in this case, it's whatever it is, it's manifesting as an offense, if we're feeling that, to immediately alter that emotion, we can appreciate that devotee. Now, if you want to take it even to a higher level, which will be difficult for some of you, will be difficult in some circumstances, if you want to take it to a higher level, when you realize you're becoming critical, not only appreciate, take it one step and pray for that devotee. Ask Krishna to bless that devotee. Ask Krishna to help that devotee in their Krishna consciousness. Ask that devotee for anything you would ask Krishna for. And so what it does is It takes you from this very low level of consciousness, and then it elevates you. And now you're operating on a much higher level. And we just did this in our online course in forgiveness. And one of the things that we did was we asked the devotees to pray for the person who they had an issue with. So they did this exercise, and they prayed, and they offered blessings, however they wanted to bless and pray for that person. And then we asked the devotees to share and said, well, what happened? And they said, it all became about them, whereas resentment was all about me. I've been hurt by this person. They did this. It's all about blaming them and me being hurt. And they said, when they focused on appreciation and blessing, then it was all about them. It was all about helping them, their welfare. And it was such a different state of consciousness that they said it was such a, it was like a, you know, it was like a total turnaround in consciousness. And such a release of this resentment, because, you know, resentment means you want to punish somebody. And so, you know, from resentment comes offense, anger, and so forth. And so, when we're praying, it's just transcending that. It's a total different world of emotion. It's like some people, I think this one person wrote a book and he analyzed emotions according to vibrations, and higher emotions are higher vibrations and lower emotions are lower vibrations. And he said, you know, there are many people on these lower vibrational levels. And they, you know, just their life is, you know, full of, they bring wherever they go resentment and anger and jealousy, envy. That's just how they operate. And there's some people that operate on a higher level. And if the lower people get around the people who operate on a higher level, it will raise them. So as devotees, we're meant to operate on a higher level. So that's why it's nice to think of these, you could say, counterintuitive ways of thinking. And so you find in spiritual teachings, you'll find some things that aren't logical. Like Jesus said, if someone slaps you on the face, what's a logical thing to do? There's a couple logical things to do. Get out of the way because he might slap you again. Run away. Call the police or fight back. It does seem like, you know, or try to talk to him and calm him down. So what does Jesus say? He said, give him your other cheek. It seems so illogical, so counterintuitive. If somebody hates you, how do you respond? Sometimes you respond with a gun to protect yourself. What did Jesus say? Respond with love. It seems illogical. It seems counterintuitive. Someone's hurt you. Feelings of resentment seem to be the most natural way to respond. You're protecting yourself. You just get this person away. It seems a natural way to respond. What do the scriptures tell us? What does Jesus tell us? What did Srila Prabhupada tell us? What does Bhaktisiddhanta, they all say? Show the highest regard and respect and affection to your worst enemies. So it's really, you know, there's no material logic to it. And so, you know, when you're feeling or you realize you've offended a devotee, you know, it's the antidote, as Lord Chaitanya is saying. The remedy for offending is to appreciate, and also the antidote. In other words, the antidote in this context, meaning the preventative measure, is if you're always appreciating, there's no chance for offense. Now, I had a wonderful experience in the forgiveness workshop I do. One of the things we ask devotees to do is appreciate the person who hurt them. And inevitably, the experience devotees have is that it's the nature of the heart that you can't have two contradictory emotions going on simultaneously. You can't have a very high emotion and a very low emotion going on at the same time. One has to overtake the other. So, for example, when you're in the mood of offense and you're angry and you're critical, it's unlikely that you can have any mood or any concept of appreciation for that person. You only see the problem, you only see what's wrong, what they did. And conversely, when you're appreciating the person or blessing the person, it's virtually impossible to have any room in your heart for ill feelings, because now you're operating on this such a high level. And so we've been told that appreciation, it's a process of bhakti. We should serve devotees, that's Vaishnava Seva. And one part of Vaishnava Seva is to appreciate them. Or Lord Chaitanya said, to glorify the devotee is the perfection of speech. And Prabhupada said, to glorify a pure devotee is even more powerful than glorifying Krishna. So we've heard these things. But when we did the exercise, we actually realized the real effect of that is that when there is appreciation, there's actually a change in your heart. It's amazing. And if you do this, you can do this. You take anyone you have an issue with, or anyone that you think you're offending now, or anyone who's hurt you, and just pretend you could write a letter write a letter to them what you appreciate. You could send it, not send it, or pretend you're talking to them, say, I appreciate this and that about you. And you will see a shift in your consciousness. You will see that animosity, the negativity, you'll see it going away. Now, if the negative feelings are really deep, some of you may not be able to appreciate. You'll try and you can't. You won't even get a word out. That, I would say that's a big problem. It's a big danger signal. It's a big danger signal. But I know some people, and some people have a nature, a certain nature, that makes it more difficult to be forgiving and appreciative. It's just their personality, it's their type, it's their past karma, it's their past samskaras, it's their nature. Like, they get hurt, that's it. It's revenge for life. But devotional service is very powerful. And if you want to do this exercise and you find, I just can't do it, this person, I hate this person so much, or they hurt me so much, or they're such a jerk, they're so stupid. The things they do, it just drives me crazy. They're ruining this, they're ruining that, they're ruining my family, they're ruining the movement, whatever. That means you have to try much harder. It means that due to your nature, you find it extremely difficult to just see something good. The first Prabhupada describes three classes of devotees. The first class devotee sees everyone better than him. He only sees the good in others. Second class devotee, he distinguishes. Some people are not devotees, and there are different levels of devotees. But he's not a fault finder. He can't, he'll see something wrong, but he won't dwell on it. And he'll be able to still see the good. First class devotee, he'll only see the good. So, obviously we want to eventually become first class devotees. So, okay, let's end this story very happily with the last sentence. I am happy to report that I have recovered from the illness of aparad and am again alive and well in Krishna consciousness. Now, we have a few minutes left. I'm going to go back to chat and see if you have anything. Okay. If you do have anything, or if you have sent anything, I haven't seen it because... No, so yeah. If you want to say anything now, you can. Otherwise, I'll give you a minute or so. Otherwise... Want to say anything or ask any question? Otherwise, I'm going to read a little bit, take advantage of a few more minutes we have. So, vibrations, high vibrations, low vibrations, appreciation, blessing. Oh, I want to tell you, I don't know if I told you, this wonderful thing happened to me. I was in a hotel, I turned on the television and my favorite station came up, which is the Catholic station. It's an all-Catholic station. And on the all-Catholic station, they were talking, but one of the nuns, Mother Angelica, was talking about forgiveness. And she was constantly saying, if somebody hurts you, pray for them. That was like her stock answer, like for every situation. Pray for them. This person has hurt me. People were calling up on the phone, this person has hurt me, my mother-in-law, my sister, this, that. Yes, Mother Angelica, yes. And she kept saying, pray for them. Pray for them. I thought, it's really, That's really powerful. Somebody does something and they really bother you. And you just think, I'm going to pray for them. I'm going to pray to Krishna that Krishna blesses them. It's so counterintuitive. But really, isn't spiritual life counterintuitive? I mean, if we're meant to become saintly persons, elevate our consciousness, we're not going to act like everybody else, because everybody else would just get upset and wouldn't know what to do. Then, came across something else, right around the same time. I'm staying with a devotee who had been through the 12-step process. So I had the book, I was reading the book, and in the 12-step process, they talk about forgiveness. And so I was saying, why forgiveness? What does alcoholism and forgiveness have to do? He said, well, a lot of people drink to get back at people. People who hurt them. I'm going to get back at you by drinking. Like they hurt themselves, and they're hurting themselves, but they're getting back at others. You know, so you hurt me, and now look what's going to happen to me because of the way you dealt with me. I'm just going to become, just going to get drunk and ruin my life. Kind of, you know, that's how it goes. So, in their book, they talk about forgiveness. Talk about it a lot. And one of the things they teach in dealing with forgiveness is the exact same thing that Mother Angelica said. One of their principles is if you have issues of resentment, pray for that person. So you see how powerful it is? To wherever you're at, always try to go to the opposite extreme. Well, if you're at the negative side, if you're at the positive, don't try to go the opposite extreme. That would be a pretty dumb thing to do. So wherever you're at, and negatively, if you bring it to the positive, you know, just like, and you can do that with thoughts. So you have negative thoughts, you know, thoughts about exploiting someone. Then change those thoughts to, how could I serve them? If you're jealous of someone, what did Patanjali say? If you're jealous, he said, if you're jealous of someone, become their well-wisher. Because what is jealousy? Jealousy is the exact opposite. Jealousy means, I want what you have. Actually, envy means, I want what you have and I don't want you to have it. So particularly if you're becoming envious of someone, then to counter that, the exact counter would be to become their well-wisher, because you don't want them to have it. But if you become their well-wisher, then yes, you have these things and you have more. Okay. Yes. You know, Dr. Greg says I look tired. You know, I was on my feet today for 11 hours. Can you believe that? I guess we should end class here. Yeah. And I came right back after being on my feet for 11 hours, and I thought, well, maybe I'll get to sit down and rest a little bit. But I had to do a little email, and then it was time to give class. So we're going to end class with some music. What kind of music? Russian music? Russian classical music? Grand finale that we have all transcended our lower nature. At least we know how. We have some tools. And you know, with the help of the 12-step program, with the help of teachings of Lord Jesus, with the help of Mother Angelica, and the help of the teachings of the Vaishnavas, we all see how they're leading us to not do what we feel like doing always, or what's logical, but to do what's extraordinary. As Bhaktisiddhanta said, supra-mundane, to do what's beyond the mundane. So we will see you next week. Next week I'll actually be back in Alachua, so I can guarantee that we're going to have a show. Okay, so Kremlin's going to find some Russian music, but how are we going to hear it? You'll have to play it in your own room. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you, everyone, for watching, and we will see you next week. Same time, same station. Hare Krishna. No, it's finished. Oh, you going to bed?
Yeah.
Are you or no?
Yeah.
You're tired?
Are you still on video?
No, I finished. Come here.
The door?
Mm-hmm. If you go to Krishna.com, that's what you're going to see.
The door that me and Mama and that we're sleeping in?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of coming off. So just when you close the door, be cautious that you don't shut it all the way, just to leave a crack in case if the door falls off.
When I get my clothes
out. I'll show you.
Are you not eating?
What's
that mean? Well, I put the salad out for you, but just the bread and jelly and butter.
I think I'll bypass the bread program. Give it a cut. Just have some cheese.
I know you do. I'm not using
it. My body really likes fruit.
Well,
there's fruit here. It really doesn't like raw food, does it?
There's apples. I don't know. Just get it yourself. I gotta do something with the sugar. So you're gonna sleep out here.
I just put the lights.
Yes.
You want it?